Live from Blake Street Tavern in the center of the biggest party of the year, here's The Drive.
Woodrum to the end zone, picked off. There's a lot of room. Oh my goodness, talk about a game-changing play. He could go the distance. It is Devontae Bosby with his fifth interception of the season.
Yeah, we are here at Blake Street Tavern and plenty to talk about with the Rockies. As we're in the top of the third, runner on second, the Dodgers are going to take a 1-0 lead. Okay, we'll get to that in a second. But Troy, I want to start with you first about the acquisition of Devontae Bosby coming to the Broncos. So we got a speedster, we got a cornerback. And by the way, there have been a series of players who have actually been signed to the NFL from the AAF.
Yeah, I want to get excited about it. I'm happy for Devontae to get an opportunity, but the reality is the guys that were in the AAF were in the minor leagues a tick below practice squad. So I'm not going to get crazy about it until I see him actually in practices. He can run. I think he's been a 4-3 guy. He went to the AAF and showed speed, certainly an ability to break on a ball. He had four interceptions, I believe. So, you know, and good for him. And it allowed him to get on a platform that he wouldn't have had otherwise, but I don't see it in any way connected with the Chris Harris situation people have asked about. It is connected if you were going to take a cornerback perhaps like a seventh round or an undrafted free agent. Maybe you look at the undrafted free agents and say, no, we like this guy a little better. But I would say pump the brakes. He was in the AAF for a reason. Yeah, that wasn't a whole bunch of NFL players they were hiding in the AAF, trust me.
Yeah, it's the equivalent of basically taking a flyer on an undrafted free agent. But, you know, to the credit of the AAF, it gave an opportunity to put some tape, guys to put themselves on tape, right? It gave an opportunity to see, well, here's what I can do. Maybe you haven't seen me since college or something like that. Or maybe I played in the pros at some level, but here I am now. So, essentially, for at least a handful of guys, Troy, it was kind of fantastic. That being said, the meltdown of the AAF in general, though, was a bit stunning. What did you think about what absolutely came out in terms of the incredible collapse of this league?
Well, the owner of the Carolina Hurricanes bailed him out with $250 million, and when he did, he took control of operations. For some reason, Bill Polian and Ebersole didn't recognize that when someone gives you that type of money, they are now running the organization.
Right.
You can think you are, you're not. And he did it, I was told, and when I read, to get access to their technology, their apps, the science, he had really no interest in saving the league, and he tried to publicly pressure the NFLPA to pressure teams to make practice squad players available.
And so they didn't.
They did not. And the NFLPA is like, yeah, we were talking about it, but it wasn't going to happen in a week.
Right.
This is the NFL.
But you took my $250 million.
And he was like, okay.
All right.
No practice squad players. I'm not crazy about the technology. I'm shutting you down.
And my guess, too, is he didn't sink all of that money in.
Correct.
My guess is that
it was installments, I'm sure.
Correct. But, I mean, the stories were crazy, like unpaid hotel bills. Guys literally being left homeless and no way to really get home, 1,700 miles away from mom and dad. Not informing the players directly, just sending out like an email and, hey, you know, call your pal and tell him he's unemployed. It was wild just like how it went away. And by the way, I read the Bill Polian comments and I was like, well, listen, dude, I've got an idea. Let's have flying jet cars. That's my idea. You heard it here first. D-Mac said flying jet cars, Troy. But just because I say it doesn't mean if someday a flying jet car kind of buzzes around Denver that I have a right to it. I got it, Bill Polian. You had an idea for a league. But until you put your money behind it, it's not really yours.
Right, and it's amazing to me that they were in trouble after like 2-3 weeks.
Yeah, how do you not think about this?
Wasn't there a worst-case scenario of like, this is our budget, and if everything goes wrong, this is how we get through a 10-week season? You can't be in trouble after 2 weeks. Like, what happened with the projections in the budget that you were already in danger of failing 2 weeks in? And that's what surprised me. I covered an independent league team in Yuma, Arizona.
Okay.
I worked at the Yuma Daily Sun, and I covered the Yuma Desert Dogs. And this league was in California and in Arizona. And this guy, I was doing these stories on, these investigative stories, that he was bouncing checks all over California. He was essentially funding an independent baseball league on a credit card. And our paper was heavily invested in the league, and they were saying, if you write any more negative stories, we're going to fire you. And I'm like, I keep telling, this is going to go under. He has no money. And so 6 games in, like you said, there was a sign at the ticket box that said, no games scheduled, league shut down. Same thing with players, no way home. And they're in independent baseball, so just practically destitute anyway. And
well,
just,
what'd you do on the beat?
I mean, I left the paper right after that. I used that story to get hired somewhere else, but it was horrible for these guys. They literally walked in and everything was locked. Like, it was like, you know, look, turn off the lights, league over.
Well, we got Bosby out of the A, so he'll be it. I mean, unless we get another AAF player, but he'll forever be the Broncos AAF remnant.
Well, I remember XFL, he hate me. That's the legacy of
He played in the league for actually a few years.
Yeah, he was a player. Now, let's. Malcolm Butler was the last guy added on the 90-man roster for the Patriots a few years ago. It does happen. It's just, understand the expectations of anyone you would add this time of year.
Here's what Bosby is. He's fast.
Right.
He's really fast. And, you know, that doesn't lie.
No.
So, I understand it's not a Chris Harris thing. Okay, fine. But maybe it's a special teams thing, a depth thing, that sort of thing. I wouldn't dismiss him whatsoever. You know, there are a lot of guys available, and he became a priority, at least on that particular day. We'll get to Daniel Jones in a second, but before we go much further, we have to say congratulations to the Avalanche. Under an incredibly electric atmosphere where the fans were going nuts and everybody is ecstatic. Troy, they have done it. They are back to the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, second time in 3 years. The Broncos now have the longest playoff drought among the professional sports teams. But the Avs, remember, they basically lost 13 of 15 games at one point.
Yeah.
So just sabotaged their season. Now at home, I think they're now 11-0-2 in their last 13 home games. And what's crazy, D-Mac, is they've made a habit of trailing. 2-0 to the Oilers, yeah. 6 unanswered.
Crazy.
2-0 to the Jets, they tie it. And then you got guys literally sacrificing every part of their body in that last 30 minutes
awesome.
Or 30 seconds to prevent a goal. And they're hot. You know this. You covered Buffalo. You've covered the Avs.
Anything's possible for hockey.
Hockey, 1-8 seed is, that is as even a matchup in pro sports as there ever is in hockey. Because a goalie can steal a one or two games, and next thing you know, you're advancing. So good for the Avs. Nathan McKinnon, Tyson Berry's playing out of his mind. McGruber. Philip Grubauer playing great. So, hey, good for the Avs. They've earned it, and they did it the hard way because they basically lost every game for like 3 weeks.
But they got hot at the end. They got hot at the end, and they showed guts, determination, and, boy, what a spring we have on tap. And it was years that the Pepsi Center was dark right around this time of year. Years and years. And now there'll be incredible action, hopefully, for a long period of time between both the Avalanche and the Nuggets, never mind what's happening down here on Blake Street. So, man, we're set for just a fabulous spring here, Troy. And I do think the Avalanche, you're right about hockey. You'll go as far as your goalie will take you. And if you just stay hot and you stay determined, well, sure, why not? With the Nuggets, I think they're for real, Troy. I think. They just have some of these scary, scary moments that they seem to fall apart epically. And they really haven't been playoff tested. The Avalanche feel just a little different because they did get to this place last year. So there is a feeling to me that, okay, can we take what our experience was last year and build upon that? The Nuggets are a little scarier because they just haven't had that. You would like to think after doing as well as they've done, that would be fine. But we'll see. But it'll be fun to sit here and go to the games and cheer them on and be excited about it top to bottom.
Well, the reality is this. The Nuggets can score with anyone. They were in a shooting slump until the other night. You saw Malik Beasley play well, Gary Harris play well. The Nuggets' strength, D-Mac, is when they pass the ball. They had 41 assists the other night in that win. That's the most since 08. When they're unselfish, they're amazing offensively. Can they consistently play defense in the playoffs? I don't know that. But it would be a huge disappointment if they go out in the first round.
Yeah.
I don't care what anyone says. Oh, they haven't been in the playoffs since 2013.
Right. You're right.
If you go in as a two seed, you can't get knocked out in the first round.
Right.
Now, if it's San Antonio, it's going to be tough, no doubt. But the Nuggets are 32-7 at home. They should win a series because they have home court advantage. So when this team plays unselfish basketball like they did the other night, they can play with anyone, maybe with notwithstanding the Warriors. So I'm looking for them to win at least one series. I would be disappointed if they don't.
Hey, Richie, real quick, just some confirmation. Is Bosby joining us for sure at 3:15? All right, cool. So Devontae Bosby will actually be on with us, Troy, coming up here in about, 5 minutes or so. That's pretty cool. I am curious, I'm not going to lie, just about being in that league and what that really was. So we'll hear from Devontae Bosby here in just a little bit. The Rockies are down 1-0 in the bottom of the third with a runner on first and Charlie Blackman's at the plate. You know, we had our baseball war room yesterday, Troy, and one of the comments was, Charlie Blackman's got to be better. And so I was like, well, what really are the numbers? Let's not look just at batting average. But we did look at batting average with runners in scoring position, which I think is, how clutch are you? And Charlie was down 90 points in that particular statistic, Troy. What do you make of that?
Well, he was hurt last year. His legs were never healthy. And when you lose your base as a baseball player, it becomes difficult. He's shortened up his swing this year, D-Mac. He's trying a few different things, so we'll see if that pays off in situational at-bats. But, by the end of last year, Charlie was really struggling in the outfield. I mean, he was aging in dog years. I believe putting him in right field is going to make him healthier. His legs will stay underneath him, and so he should be poised for a big year because center field just ages guys here at Coors Field. You have to send a text message to the left fielder. You don't call for it. You just send a text message. It's too big. So can Blackman be better? Yes, but for me, it's going to come down to Dahl and McMahon because Blackman's going to do what he's going to do. If they're going to be a team that contends for an NL West title, they have got to get a star year from Dahl.
By the way, I just got a text from somebody. D-Mac, your theory was proven wrong. Tyler Anderson just got a single. All right, congratulations. a blind mouse finds a piece of cheese every now and then. I think I just made that up. But here's another problem if a pitcher actually gets a hit. He's now on base. And that essentially is a problem. Because, first of all, managers don't want their pitchers on base. Pitchers don't run hard when they're on base. So Charlie Blackman just hit a single. Well, there's no chance Tyler Anderson's going to go first to third. This again proves my pitchers hitting is boring. Because even if a miracle happens and they reach base, Troy, they're not going to do anything on base. I would say this. If they are not, Troy, going to allow DHs in the National League, at least allow a re-entry rule where you can pinch run for pitchers to at least keep that somewhat interesting. Are you with me on that?
Well, they won't do that, but I'm with you. Having pitchers hit is, at this point, it's become obsolete. And when they hit it,
but look what's happening now. You're just stuck on the base pass.
Right.
He's not going to run hard. He's going to just go station to station.
And here's
the level of excitement goes down.
Here's the other thing. When they run the bases, it almost always affects them on the mound the next inning.
Right. And
that's been proven statistically.
You know he's not going to steal, so the pitcher doesn't have to focus on him whatsoever.
Right.
Defense can play off. You don't have to keep Charlie Blackman on first base. I don't know. I could look, but I bet you they're playing behind him.
Yeah, they're not holding him on. They don't have
to. Why would they? So it just really, the only way a pitcher hitting makes any sense is if the guy can just yak home runs, which does happen every now and then, and boy, don't we make a big deal of it. Anyways, I was griping about that.
Well, we got Dahl up, and I've talked about Dahl as the guy, especially with Murphy out. They need a big month from David Dahl and or Ryan McMahon or both. But at home, Dahl needs to start cooking with grease because he is a guy who's talented, D-Mac, to the point he could be an all-star. That's
no
how
doubt
talented
about it.
He is.
No doubt about it.
He just hasn't been healthy.
He's got it. He's got it, Dahl. He's got it all. Yes, he needs to be a star.
And he's capable of doing it.
Yeah, so here we have that kind of first home moment of the year, and we're sort of paying attention. We'll see how it goes. All right, we're going to be joined by Devontae Bosby here in a little bit. So Troy, in your world of stories, talk to me where you would put a story of playing in the AAF and going to the NFL. How do you see that story?
I mean, I covered the Malcolm Butler story in the Super Bowl when he made the play that beat the Seahawks. So it is a feel-good story. It is an after-school special type of story. It is unlikely. It is not impossible, because to be in the AAF, you had to be talented and better than most college players. It's just the reality of the numbers are daunting. But a guy like Busby, hey, this is perfect for him. You go out, he had four picks, at least one pick six for San Antonio. You make a little name for yourself, and now you have a chance in the NFL with some film, as they say. You know what they always say in the NFL? The eye in the sky doesn't lie. Well, it didn't with him. He put film together, and he's going to get a chance, and maybe it impacts, like, hey, we like this guy enough. We're not going to go sign a college free agent. So where would it rank? It would be one of the best stories in camp if he makes the team.
Hey, Richie, is Devontae with us right now? Okay, all right. Well, his story, Troy, starts at Pittsburgh State.
The Gorillas.
Come on.
That's their mascot.
Shut up.
That is their mascot.
How do you know that?
Because I played a tournament there when I was like 13 in baseball.
Shut up.
All-star game.
Where is Pittsburgh State?
Kansas.
Right. Of course it's not in Pennsylvania. It's like
in Kansas.
Of course, you know, Dixie State is in Utah, right?
Yes.
Duh. Okay. What division is that?
I don't know that. It's D2. Oh, it's D2.
It's
FCBS. It's FCBS.
Okay. Undrafted, of course, right, out of Pittsburgh State. Kansas City Chiefs. He was on the Bears roster for 2 years. Back to the Chiefs, to the Eagles, and then to San Antonio. Richie, do we got him? Okay, just let me know. So his path has been kind of crazy in terms of being all over the place, but to his credit, as the Rockies just tied up with a run, you can hear the crowd in the background. Okay, but is he with us, Richie? Devontae, welcome to thank you for being on with us, and congratulations. What was yesterday like for you being signed by the Broncos?
Yesterday was phenomenal. The Broncos is actually my uncle's favorite team. So growing up, I always heard about the Broncos. So that was fun for him. But yesterday was phenomenal. Tonight for Fangio, Donatell, and my former teammate, Bryce Callahan, as well.
You've got to tell us what the final days of the AAF were actually like. We've heard some crazy stories over the past 24 hours. What was it like for you maybe over the past 48 hours as the league folded?
So throughout the year, you always kind of hear rumors of this, rumors of that, and you know, you had new ownership. But I really didn't read too much into it. I really didn't pay too much into it. So the day that we did get the league suspended and everything, I heard speculations in the locker room, but I didn't really pay too much into it because I heard things all year, and they kept making a way, they kept finding a way, so I didn't think much of it. So we were practicing, then the general manager, he came and cut practice short, gave us the bad news, and, you know, it was kind of on from there.
All right, I really am curious about the specifics. Like, what point of practice were you in? Because I'm assuming, like, when he made the news, practice must have ended, right, wherever it was.
Oh, so, yeah, we're at the Alamo Dome practicing, and we were already an hour in the practice, probably had another hour to go, and he just gave some news, and everything's cut short. Now, I'm hearing a lot of stories about other teams were stranded, this, that, and other. I'm not really sure if that's true or not. I only can speak of the San Antonio Commanders, and the Commanders, the team consisted of 52 players, and 45 of them was from Texas, so as far as flights and all that mess, that wasn't a big old deal. Everybody's from Texas, except a handful of us, and as far as place of stay, we're not supposed to report out until next week, so everybody's still good to go as far as the Commanders. Now, any other team, I'm not sure what their things were.
All right, so crazy, you're an hour into practice. Well, we don't practice anymore, it's done. You go in and change. When does your phone ring that the Broncos are interested?
Well, so I didn't hear from NFL teams until the day we got cleared, which is yesterday. So we officially wasn't cleared till yesterday to speak to NFL teams. So that's when I started hearing from a handful of teams. And when I heard about the Broncos, I got excited because of Fangio and Donatello. So that's kind of how that played out.
Devontae, Troy Rank here. Thanks for joining us again. You had a spectacular season in the interrupted AAF.
Yeah.
You led him in interceptions. A couple of quick questions for you. One, what is your 40 time? We've heard talk of 4.2. What did you run in the combine? What do you remember about that? And I look at your profile. You played 4 games with Chicago with Coach Fangio, right? Is that what brought you here to Denver? Because I heard from sources yesterday you had 7 or 8 teams interested. So how fast are you, and why the Broncos?
I'm a low 4.4 guy at my pro day. The 4.22 that I've been seeing online. My pro day was very windy, so I've been hearing things.
That's all right.
I ran a 1.80 4.2. I'm not sure about that, but I'm a 4.4 guy, and my final decision did come to Denver though because of the head coaches, and I love Donatello. I love what Donatello did with me in Chicago. And Fangio, he's a mastermind up there with DJ defensively in Chicago. So I know he's going to bring that to Denver, and Denver's going to be a great team because of those guys.
Well, my guess, Devontae, is you love the AAF. I mean, the AAF really helped you, I assume, even though you have definitely had your time in the NFL. So what?
I love the city of San Antonio and the organization, the Commanders organization, top to bottom, from Moose to Bob, to my coaches, Bradley and everybody. I'm very, very proud of them. I'm fortunate I was able to get the opportunity to be around my teammates. It's a great group of guys. We're a really good team. Got some athletic guys in the organization. So I love the opportunity he gave for me, and I'm back where I want to be, so I'm very appreciative of that.
What was your role on the Eagles the year they won the Super Bowl?
So that year was my practice squad year. I've been in the league 4 years, but 2017 was the only year I wasn't active. And my role was to come in and do what I had to do on the practice field and the film room and everything. And I was being a good teammate, and then just whatever was asked of me, I did it. So that year was a phenomenal year. I loved that year, and I learned a lot from that coaching staff and also those players like Malcolm Jenkins and Rodney McLeod and everybody.
So do you have a Super Bowl ring?
Yes, sir, I do have a Super Bowl ring.
You know what's great? So you bring, I mean, that is kind of cool, though, right? Like, you do have that, and you were around it, you saw it, because so many, by the way, Devontae, so many Broncos who are on that Super Bowl 50 team are actually gone. There's really not that many guys that have been through it. I'm thinking Troy on defense, what, Chris, Derek Vaughn, Emmanuel on offense, but I mean, I swear to God, Devontae, it's only like 4 or 5 guys, and you.
I'm from Kansas City, Missouri. I'm friends with Shane Ray. And he was talking about the whole Super Bowl experience. And and Shane's a free agent now, so it's not to mean there's only a handful of guys left in that Super Bowl team.
I guess my bigger question to you is, what did you learn about how you have to do things to win a Super Bowl from your time with the Eagles?
Oh, that Eagles experience was definitely a learning experience. And I applaud those guys, how serious they take things in the classroom. It starts in the classroom and during practice. They treat everything like it's a game and treat everything serious. And after practice, the extra work they're putting in, like, especially guys like Malcolm Jenkins, I learned a lot just from watching him. And that's where it starts. It starts the seriousness in the classroom, in the film room, during practice, and after practice. They took that jump serious, and that's why it showed on game days.
Devontae, when you talked about wanting to, you had familiarity with Ed Donahue, the new defensive coordinator, and Coach Fangio. We've heard Khalil Mack call Fangio an evil genius. We've heard the new cornerback, Bryce Callahan, we've heard him as the godfather. What is it, if you can take us inside a meeting a little bit or practice, what is it that makes his defense so successful? That's what people are getting excited here, that because of the schematic changes he could bring. What is it about a Fangio defense that, when you've lived it, that makes it so successful?
I like that nickname he gave Bryce and Fangio, the evil genius and everything. But Fangio, he knows how to use his guys. He puts them in good positions to make plays. And you know with a Fangio defense, you know you're going to get guys that's good to rush the passer. So in the back end, it's going to make your day even easier. I like this game. This game is phenomenal, and I know it's going to be the same thing or close to it. So generally, then for a good win, and offensively, you know those guys are going to get rolling as well. So it's going to be fun.
Well, they play
fun times in them.
It is. It looks like it's when I watch it on film, and I'm certainly not a scout, but the read and react part of it as a cornerback that is really appealing because it allows gives you some freedom to make more plays. Can you kind of take me through that a little bit and how it frees up cornerbacks? And he obviously he loves to use corner blitzes.
Correct. Yeah. So his corner blitzes or nickel blitzes, he's real big on that. Then say if you're playing off man, the read and react, and you know what the defensive call is, you know when you can go make a play or not as far as being aggressive and jumping the ball because, you know, you got some type of blitz coming or something like that. He's real big on just big defensive play calls, which means big defensive plays. So as a cornerback, you know you're going to have guys that's good to rush the passer and fancy out of defense. So it's going to be all out going crazy on the defensive side of the ball.
Well, we congratulate you. What an experience with the AAF. Back to the NFL for you. And hopefully a great new home here in Denver. Congratulations, Devontae.
Appreciate you. Much love.
Pulling for you.
All right.
That's a great story. Great story, Devontae.
Great story. With Super Bowl experience, even on the practice squad, and experience with Fangio and Donatell.
Yeah,
how about that?
Can't hurt. I mean, when you're trying to make the team, it's like if you're trying to make your way at a company, you know the boss.
Helps.
You're trying to make the team. It doesn't hurt that you've been in that scheme in practice. Now, his resume doesn't jump, but, hey, sometimes you just need opportunity, D-Mac. And we hope for his sake he gets a fair shake, and he has a chance. He had 8 teams interested, and he was drawn because of Donatell and Fangio. So good for him. He's an easy guy to pull for.
Mac Muncy came from nowhere, and now he's a big pain in the butt. He just hit a home run to center field. The Rockies are trailing 2-1. We're live at Blake Street Tavern, but it's only the top of the fourth. A long way to go, so we'll have a lot of Rockies react as it happens. When we come back, though, the journey to go see Daniel Jones. What is this all about? Details next, right here on The Drive.
Live from Blake Street Tavern in the center of the biggest party of the year, here's The Drive.
Back with Troy Rank, a packed house here at the Blake Street Tavern, and Rockies are down 2-1. The Yeti tailgate party with Coors Light is rolling, and the Coors Light beer garden is open, and there's music, the grill's going, there's cornhole. I mean, it is an awesome atmosphere, and although it's busy, if you're bumping around and you're looking for some fun this afternoon or tonight, no place better than lower downtown right here at the Blake Street Tavern, where we have set up, we have a table, and then we have some barriers in front of us, Troy. Now, the barriers are a little necessary. Not that, you know, people are rushing us like we're the Beatles or anything, Troy, but people are excited sometimes to say hello. And the degree that they say hello is sometimes determined by the amount of liquid that is pursued through their body throughout the course of the day. So the barrier is just a nice little way to just give us a little protection from the very, very, very friendly people. But what it's also provided is some incredible entertainment, because the stanchions have little, stands that jut out that people don't see. So as we sit here, it's just a rolling parade of people tripping right in front of us.
It was funny when I was walking across from the ballpark over here today. The one guy was making fun of the other guy who was drunk, and he's like, I knew he wasn't doing well because he was swaggering. And the guy's like, staggering? He goes, no, he was swaggering. Like, okay,
hey.
So he's unbelievably cool, but he's hammered. I've never seen a man swagger like that and be so off balance.
Oh, that's funny.
He was swaggering.
We have already seen today kind of a sample of the problems the Rockies are having. For example, the bases are loaded with one out and Nolan's up. Nolan drives the ball and drives the run in. Okay, great. You know, that's a good at-bat. Way to go, Nolan. Good baseball. But the problem is that's where it ended. That they took a bases loaded, one-out situation, Troy, and the best they could get out of it was one run. Again, good to get a run. You get a run every inning, you're doing all right. Driving a runner in from third with less than 2 outs, good deal. But, Troy, isn't that a Coors Field? Somebody just tripped, I swear to God, right in front of us as I was talking. Isn't that a Coors Field moment early in a game where you want to put up a big number?
Well, at Coors Field, when you step into the batter's box, you're in scoring position.
Right.
So, yes, you're right. It's a squandered opportunity when, you know, you don't probably think Anderson's going to – can he stop it at two? Maybe. But he gives up home runs. So, yes, with the middle of the order up in that situation, you would have loved to walk away with a crooked number. One feels like a disappointment. You know, and it's a lonely number, as we know. But yeah. That was a –
it's one of those moments.
That's a tough moment there when you've got a pitcher, I guarantee you, Maeda, he's not looking forward to pitching here.
Right.
Now, all of a sudden, he's got confidence in his secondary pitches again. So we'll see.
And sure enough, in the top of that inning, Muncy comes up. Like you just said, you're in scoring position at the plate. Turns on a ball, hits it 400 feet to left center, and there we go. Now we're losing 2-1 instead of being up, you know, 3-1, 4-1 maybe, you know, something like that. And that little stuff is going to add up, Troy, if the Rockies can't take advantage of it. So it's like the world's tiniest of red flags. But a lot of times baseball is made up in minutia. And that was just a moment. So let's see. We'll see how it goes. And then you have another situation here with the Rockies, Troy. It's the catching situation. And, you know, Iannetta just won a game the other day, so I should be kind of nice to him, right? But Tony Walters, and we love Tony Walters as a person, and we love Tony Walters for the hit he delivered against the Cubs.
And for his porn star mustache. He's got that going for him.
For all of those reasons. But how many times are we going to watch Tony Walters pop up weekly to right field?
He's like having another pitcher at the bottom of the lineup. Unless, when Marquez is in, he's worse than Marquez as a hitter. I was talking to two longtime scouts today for about an hour about a bunch of things across the baseball landscape. But I asked them, and one scout told me, he goes, the one thing that surprised me about the Rockies this offseason, the one position he felt they needed to upgrade was catcher. So Realmuto would have been ideal. It would have cost them a Peter Lambert, two top prospects. Rockies aren't going to play on that. They're not trading away prospects the way they're built. But I was asking him, I said, I hear so much about the ability for Walters for his pitch framing, and they were laughing. It's like, yeah, you don't have to receive the ball anymore. Just frame it.
Right.
He does, you know, he has an error every third game and hits 170, but it's a reflection of the position.
Yeah.
That Yasmani Grandal is considered a good defensive catcher. 3-4 years ago, he was among the worst, and they're not a bunch of him in the minor leagues either.
And this
so
is
that's
why,
the
this,
problem,
right.
is finding one.
This is why the number one pick in this June's draft likely will be Adley Rutschman out of Oregon State.
Right.
Who's a power, check this out, a power hitting average, hits with power, hits for average, and is a switch hitting catcher.
Yeah, he's legit.
Who can play first base.
He's legit.
So there's talk that he, Troy, may go directly into Major League Baseball.
Like, that won't happen.
Well, there's talk about it. But the problem is there's a dearth in that position. Just for the sake of argument, what would it take for the Rockies to actually get to a top three spot in the draft?
You really can't trade it the way you do in the NFL.
Impossible, then?
Yeah, I mean, you can trade money. I mean, you can move around a little bit, but, yeah, they wouldn't be in a position to draft him. The kid last year from Georgia Tech, Joey Bart, went number two overall from Georgia Tech, a catcher. But to your point, the kid from Oregon State's going to go in the top. He might be the top overall pick because
yeah, right.
There's nobody that can play that position anymore, it feels like. Now, there's Dodgers have depth in their system. Cardinals have a little bit of depth. But there's only a handful of teams with any depth.
When was the last – who's the last switch-hitting catcher you can think of?
Switching that was decent?
Yeah. Oof. Was Johnny Bench a switch-hitting catcher?
No, he was not.
He was not?
Jeff Reed, I believe. Jeff Reed was a left-handed hitting catcher, which was unusual. The best catcher that's been the last, you know, several years is Buster Posey. He's a Hall of Famer, but he's not a switch hitter. You know, it's just hard to find guys. The best athletes, they used to get them and move them to catcher. Now they don't want to move.
Right. For example, Bryce Harper.
He was a catcher.
He was a catcher.
The reason he moved to the outfield was why? To get to the big leagues more quickly. Because to learn to catch a big league staff with guys throwing 95 to 100 and you're coming from college, we think it's easy. It's not as easy as you think, where you're catching 12 guys and every one of them have crazy stuff. So, but Rocky's got to upgrade that position. I think they will at some point during the season.
When we come back, we got to celebrate the Avalanche football at 4. John Elway's on the move to look at a quarterback. details all still to come as we broadcast live here at Blake Street Tavern on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan.
Live from Blake Street Tavern in the center of the biggest party of the year, here's The Drive.
Very deep. Shoots.
That's awesome. As we just watch people endlessly trip in front of us, Troy, I don't think that's going to stop all afternoon. But we want to say hats off to the Avalanche for making the playoffs. Troy, what do you think was the secret ingredient to the Avs turning things around at the end of the season, despite midseason blues?
Well, MacKinnon played great. You get at the very end, you get Landy back, your captain. And Tyson Barrie got hot. I mean, their lines finally seemed like they got situated the way they wanted them. And let's be honest, Grubauer was my guy, McGruber. He played well. You know, they're just, you know, and I'm not a hockey guy. I covered it for a couple years with the Avs. They played a desperate brand of hockey, D-Mac, for the last month. They looked like a playoff team. They were playing with urgency. You know how this is. When they, you can tell, like, are they going to win the battles in the corners? Are they going to be diving in front of the net? Like, I saw a team playing desperate, urgent hockey. They have crazy talent in MacKinnon. They have Barrie, who got hot. And I'm telling you, their defense, they just were better. But what's crazy about it, because when I was last covered the league, man, it was dump and chase. You got behind 2-3-0. You were done.
Right.
But now they're behind 2-0, and they're just, they're a fast hockey team. They're a real, they're a fun. They're kind of like the Nuggets of like a couple years ago, where offensively they challenge teams because they are, they put pressure on them. But I just, MacKinnon, honestly, I mean, with all due respect to Philip Lindsay winning the card as Sports Hall of Fame best professional athlete,
yeah,
Nathan MacKinnon had the best season.
Yeah, he has set records that, you know, go back to like Joe Sakic in terms of his effectiveness. So you say he's like Joe Sakic, that means he's a future Hall of Famer. So the potential for Nathan MacKinnon is, it's ridiculous. And it was more dramatic than Philip Lindsay. The story of Philip Lindsay is a great story.
Oh, it's a great story.
And it's probably easier to get Philip Lindsay to a dinner than Nathan MacKinnon in the middle of the hockey season. So, you know, whatever kind of on that. But, again, congratulations. It looks like it'll be Calgary. There's kind of some wacky things that could happen where it's not Calgary, but most likely it'll be the Flames.
Well, again, I'll say this about it. I covered an Avs team that as a one seed lost to the Oilers, who were an eight seed. It really, a hot goalie that can keep the score within a goal, you have a chance in hockey. The hockey goalie is the most powerful place in sports in the playoffs, even more than a quarterback, even more than a guard in basketball, because he can prevent one thing from happening. And these guys, sometimes they stand on their head, they do these gymnastics, and you're like, they're never going to score. So I like the Avs' chances, honestly. They are 11-2-1, something like 11 wins in their last 13 home games. They're hot, D-Mac. What do you always know about hockey? What does it come down to?
The ice is cold.
And who's hot at the end?
That's right.
Who is hot going into the playoffs?
Hot team, cold ice.
And they are hot, man. They're cooking with grease, D-Mac. Cooking with grease.
By the way, here's, unfortunately, on opening day, a nightmare scenario for the Rockies. That their number three starter, Tyler Anderson, who we've had plenty of questions about, seems to be going along okay. And then after four innings of pitching, when you really needed him to get through six, Troy, blows up and gives up a three-run homer, and now the Rockies trail 6-1. And the ripple effect of this is severe, because you only got through four innings, we're in the fifth, and you make the incredible double switch. The complexities of the double switch, Troy. How do people ever figure it out? Where you actually bring in a position player and a pitcher at the same time. I mean, look at that brilliant managing by Bud Black. What we really see is you don't want, you're desperate. You need a, who's in? I can't even tell.
Estevez, I believe. Carlos Estevez.
Right, and the reason why you do a double switch
is, it's actually pronounced Estevez.
Why you do a double switch is, you don't want him to hit.
Right.
So now you have to take out one of your starters, theoretically a better hitter, to put in Pat Valaika, who started the season in the minors. Patty Barrels, do you deserve a nickname? He did go to UCLA. And look at this. A ground ball. Is it? Did they get a double play?
I don't think
what's
he,
the call? Make a call, dude.
How does he not make a call?
Call it, dude. What's he doing?
He's out. Jeez, why'd that take so long?
That was bizarre. Anyways, the problem is double switches are the most overrated move in baseball. They're not complicated. They're not hard to do. And they're generally done in total desperation because you're in a situation where you think your pitcher may have to be on the mound, your relief pitcher, for two, maybe three innings. So it's not hard to do, nor is it that complicated.
You know what's not overrated? Home runs. Cody Bellinger hit his sixth home run in eight games. He's growing a beard because he started hitting in spring training, and this is what I love about baseball. He was starting to percolate in spring training, starts growing a beard. By the end of this series, he's going to look like one of the guys from ZZ Top.
Nice.
He freaking six home runs in eight games. The Rockies have two in eight games as a team. And Tyler Anderson, what did I tell you, has trouble keeping the ball in the park. 30 home runs last year allowed. That tied for the most. A three-run shot here. They're down 6-1. And here's why that stinks. This is that impressionable crowd, that fringe crowd that may come back on Sunday night when they're on ESPN Sunday night for the first time since 2001. You don't want to leave them with this impression. Now, maybe you lose, but you hope you lose 10-8, not 11-2.
Yeah, I mean, it's only the top of the fifth, so there's certainly, you know, anything's possible. And if you're going to get down, it's obviously better to get down early and try to chip your way back. So once you get down by, like, six runs in the eighth inning, it always feels like, you know, this is a wrap. In a Major League Baseball, where relief pitching is so strong, you know, usually it is. So the time to make hay for the Rockies is 5, 6, 7. Now, the problem here is there's no outs and there's a runner on first, so they're hardly in safe territory right now. So we'll see what happens. But if the Rockies want to succeed, well, okay, let me go here. How long is Tyler Anderson your third starter, not John Gray?
I would say that if by the end of May, if Anderson hasn't figured it out, he's going to be in the minor leagues. They can't be as patient this year with a couple of these guys. Remember last year, they basically let Desmond hit 190 for like 10 weeks.
Yeah, but I think you're stuck with Desmond way more than you are Tyler Anderson because of the salary that you paid him.
Right, but you could bench him. But Peter Lambert.
Yeah, but I mean, why? Okay, go ahead.
Peter Lambert's in the minor leagues. He's really good.
Okay.
And if he gets hot in AAA, there is going to be a moment where they have to make a tough decision with Chad Bettis and Tyler Anderson.
Okay.
Because if you want to win the division, you can't have two spots in your rotation where you blow up the bullpen and feel like you can't win. Now, it's early. It's early. But Anderson had this problem last year where he can't keep the ball in the park. That's an issue when you play at Coors Field.
Well, thank goodness, by the way. And this is where Daniel Murphy's injury hurts us, too. Because now you're down what was going to be one of your core players. You're putting in Pat Valaika, who just turned an amazing double play, which is awesome. But don't forget, Pat Valaika was in the minors. Good play there. And now he's in your hitting order for the next, four innings, I guess. Unless he gets taken out for Tappy or something else like that. It's just a weakening of the lineup in general. And it's based on poor performance by the starting pitcher. We'll take a break. When we come back, John Elway's on the road again. This time looking for quarterbacks. Paging Daniel Jones. We'll get there next.